Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. Today, we're diving into a figure who really embodies the idea of opposites attract, Shiva, the supreme destroyer and ascetic. You know, we've got some fascinating sources lined up for this one. Ancient texts, historical observations, the works.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
It is going to be a good one. And our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to unpack this duality, the symbolism of Nataraja's dance and the meaning behind the lingam.
It's intriguing, isn't it? I mean, Shiva as a deity, he just seems to contain multitudes. He's revered as the destroyer of the universe. But this destruction isn't about a final ending. It's more like clearing the slate, making space for rebirth and renewal.
Right, and that ties into the whole Hindu concept of samsara, which I find so captivating. It's this idea that existence is cyclical birth, death, and rebirth happening over and over again.
Exactly. Imagine it like the changing seasons. Each one has its purpose. Spring brings new life. Summer allows for growth. Autumn leads to shedding the old. And winter is a time of dormancy before the cycle starts anew. Samsara applies this same principle to the universe, and Shiva, as the destroyer, is a key player in keeping the cycle moving.
That's a great way to put it. It makes this vast cosmic concept feel a little more tangible. So we've got Shiva as this cosmic force of change, but he's also depicted as a yogi, deep in meditation, completely detached from worldly concerns. How do those two sides fit together?
Yeah, that's where the real paradox of Shiva comes in. He embodies both extremes, the ascetic who renounces all worldly desires and the householder with a wife and family. He's the ultimate renunciate and yet fully engaged in the world.
Wow. That's a tough balancing act for most of us to even imagine, let alone achieve. Do our sources offer any clues on how these seemingly contradictory aspects of Shiva coexist?
Well, one way to understand it is to see these two aspects not as conflicting, but as complementary. Shiva, as the ascetic, represents the spiritual path, the inward journey of self-discovery and liberation, but he also embodies the householder, engaged in the world, fulfilling his duties and responsibilities. It's like saying that true enlightenment isn't about escaping the world, but about finding a way to live in it with awareness and detachment.
So it's not an either situation, but a both hand. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
And then we've got another layer to this multifaceted deity Rudra, the storm god aspect of Shiva. This one sounds a bit more intense.
He is indeed. Think untamed nature, raw power, the kind of forces that can be both terrifying and awe-inspiring. Rudra embodies the wild energy that exists within the cosmos and even within ourselves.
I can see where the destroyer label really comes into play with Rudra, but you're saying that this fierceness isn't necessarily a bad thing?
Exactly. It's not about malicious destruction, but about the power needed for transformation. Think about a forest fire. It can be devastating, but it also clears the way for new growth. Similarly, Rudra's energy represents the force that breaks down old structures and patterns to make way for new beginnings. It's the energy that helps us overcome obstacles and ultimately achieve liberation.
Okay, so we're starting to see how these different facets of Shiva, the destroyer, the ascetic, and the fierce Rudra actually weave together into a more complete picture. It's this dynamic interplay of seemingly opposing forces that makes him such a compelling figure.
And it's this very duality that offers us a powerful framework for understanding the complexities of our own lives, doesn't it?
It really does. We've talked about samsara and this constant cycle of change, but I'm curious, how does that idea connect to the iconic image of Shiva as Nataraja, the Lord of the Gants? One of our sources described this dance as the continuous cycle of creation and destruction, the scattering and gathering that defines existence.
That's a fantastic question and a perfect segue to exploring the symbolism of Nataraja. This image of Shiva dancing within a circle of fire encapsulates so much of what we've been discussing. The dance itself, it represents that continuous cycle of creation and destruction that, you know, governs the universe. Each movement has symbolic meaning. For instance, the drum in one of Shiva's hands signifies creation, while the fire he holds in another represents destruction.
That makes sense. And what about that circle of fire that surrounds him? What does that symbolize?
Oh, that's a representation of the cosmos, the endless cycle of birth, death, and rebirth that we were just talking about. Within this cosmic dance, Shiva maintains a balance between these opposing forces, reminding us that they're not separate entities, but rather interconnected aspects of existence.
So it's like he's saying that creation and destruction aren't at odds with each other, but actually work together to drive the universe forward. That's a pretty powerful image. And one of our sources mentions an 11th century scholar named Al-Biruni, who observed Hindus being scattered like atoms of dust during invasions. It's a striking image that seems to connect with this idea of cosmic cycles and Shiva's dance, doesn't it?
It does. Al-Biruni's observation highlights how, even in times of chaos and destruction, there's an underlying order, a cosmic dance, if you will, that continues to unfold. It's like those ancient Indian mathematicians who developed a long series of number names for very high numerals, including a concept for infinity, something many other cultures struggle to grasp.
That's a really interesting connection. How did they express this idea of infinity through their number system?
Well, unlike systems limited to finite quantities, the ancient Indian system used place value notation and a base 10 structure. This allowed them to conceptualize and express immensely vast numbers, essentially pushing towards the boundless nature of infinity. Just like Shiva's dance encompasses all of creation and destruction, their mathematical system could accommodate numbers of, well, staggering magnitude.
So in a way, both Shiva's dance and these ancient mathematical concepts reflect a similar capacity for understanding the vast and infinite. It's like their minds were already attuned to the cosmic scale.
Precisely. And speaking of vast and infinite, that brings us to another powerful symbol associated with Shiva, the lingam.
Ah, yes, the lingam. It's often misinterpreted, isn't it?
It is, unfortunately. Yeah. The common misconception is that it's simply a phallic symbol. But its true meaning is much deeper and more profound.
Our sources are very clear on this point. The lingam isn't about a literal interpretation, but represents the formless, infinite nature of Shiva himself. It's a symbol of that ultimate reality that transcends dualities and limitations.
Exactly. Imagine trying to represent pure energy, the very essence of existence. It's beyond shape or form. That's what the lingam attempts to convey, the formless, limitless nature of Shiva, the source of all creation. And this ties back to his role as the destroyer, because to make way for new creation, you need that which is beyond form, beyond limits.
I'm seeing more and more how all these aspects of Shiva are interconnected, how they reflect this fundamental concept of duality and the balance of opposing forces. So we've talked about Shiva as the destroyer, the ascetic, the fierce Rudra, the cosmic dancer, but he's also depicted as a householder with a wife and children. How does that fit into this whole picture of duality?
That's a great point. It highlights that Shiva isn't just a distant cosmic entity, but also a deity who engages with the world, with human experience. His role as a householder demonstrates that spiritual growth doesn't require complete renunciation of the world. It's about finding a balance between inner detachment and worldly engagement.
So it's like he's showing us that there isn't just one path to enlightenment. There's the path of the ascetic, the path of the householder, and perhaps even a path that embraces both.
Exactly. And this brings us back to the fundamental message of Shiva's duality, that life isn't about choosing one extreme over the other, but about finding a way to integrate all aspects of ourselves, embracing the full spectrum of human experience.
That's a powerful message. But I'm wondering, how do we actually apply that to our own lives? How do we find that balance between those seemingly opposing forces within ourselves?
That's the question, isn't it? It's a journey of self-discovery, and there's no one-size-fits-all answer. But perhaps understanding Shiva's paradoxical nature can be a starting point.
So how can understanding Shiva's paradoxical nature be a starting point for us in our own lives?
It invites us to, you know, recognize and embrace the dualities within ourselves. We all have aspects of the ascetic and the householder, the creator and the destroyer, the calm and the fierce. Instead of trying to suppress or deny these different parts of ourselves, perhaps we can learn to integrate them, to see them as complementary forces that contribute to our wholeness.
That reminds me of something we discussed earlier, the concept of samsara, that constant cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. I'm starting to see how understanding this cycle can be incredibly helpful in navigating the ups and downs of life.
Absolutely. Just as Shiva destroys to create, we too experience endings and new beginnings throughout our lives. Relationships end, jobs change, we lose loved ones, we face setbacks and challenges. But if we view these events through the lens of samsara, we can see them not as finalities, but as opportunities for transformation and growth.
It's like that quote we mentioned about the Hindus being scattered like atoms of dust. It speaks to the idea that even when things fall apart, there's a potential for regrouping, for coming back together in a new form.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that change is inevitable and that endings are often necessary for new beginnings to emerge. Shiva's dance isn't just about destruction. It's about the dynamic interplay of creation and dissolution that keeps the universe in a constant state of flux.
And just like in the ancient Indian number system, where they could conceptualize infinity, maybe we can start to see our own lives as part of a much larger infinite cycle.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It shifts our perspective, doesn't it? It allows us to move through challenges with more grace and acceptance, knowing that endings are not the end of the story, but simply a turning of the page.
It really does. It takes some of the fear out of the unknown. and invites us to embrace the cyclical nature of life.
And maybe, just maybe, it allows us to see ourselves as part of something much bigger, much grander than our individual experiences. Perhaps that's the ultimate lesson Shiva offers us through his paradoxical nature, that within each of us lies the potential for both creation and destruction, for stillness and dynamism, for detachment and engagement. And by embracing these dualities, we can tap into a deeper well of wisdom and understanding, and ultimately live more fulfilling lives.
What a powerful thought to end on. It seems like every time we delve into these ancient concepts, we discover insights that are incredibly relevant to our modern lives.
It's a testament to the enduring wisdom of these traditions and their ability to speak to the human experience across time and cultures.
I don't know about you, but I feel like I need some time to process all of this. There's so much to unpack and contemplate.
As with any deep dive, the real work begins after we've explored the sources. It's about taking these ideas and integrating them into our own understanding of the world and ourselves.
And for our listener, perhaps this deep dive has sparked some curiosity about Shiva's paradoxical nature. We've explored a lot today, but there's always more to learn and discover. Maybe this is a starting point for you to explore your own personal connection to these ideas and see how they resonate with your own life experiences.
And as you contemplate Shiva's dance of creation and destruction, perhaps you might ask yourself, where do you see this cycle playing out in your own life? What aspects of yourself are ready to be shed to make way for new growth and transformation?
That's a great question to leave our listener with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of Shiva. Until next time.